So today we're continuing from Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, third chapter, text 32. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. I think we're actually on text 31, no? Archita Prabhu? Okay, thank you. Yata nabhasi me ghao gho. Renurva partivo nile. Evam drashtari drishtyatvam. Arupitam abuddhibihi. Yatha nabhasi me ghao gho. Renurva partivo nile. Evam drashtari drishtyatvam. Arupitam abuddhibihi. Yatha nabhasi me ghao gho. Renurva partivo nile. Evam drashtari drishtyatvam. Arupitam abuddhibihi. Prabhujis. Yatha nabhasi me ghao gho. Venurva partivo nile. Evam drashtari drishtyatvam. Arupitam abuddhibihi. Yatha nabhasi me ghao gho. Renurva partivo nile. Evam drashtari drishtyatvam. Arupitam abuddhibihi. Matajis. Yatha nabhasi me ghao gho. Renurva partivo nile. Evam drashtari drishtratvam. Arupitam abuddhibihi. Yatha nabhasi me ghao gho. Renurva partivo nile. Evam drashtari drishtratvam. Arupitam abuddhibihi. Yatha nabhasi me ghao gho. Renurva partivo nile. Evam drashtari drishtyatvam. Arupitam abuddhibihi. Word meanings. Yatha, as it is. Nabhasi, in the sky. Megha oghaha, a mass of clouds. Renuhu, dust. Va, as well as. Partivaha, muddiness. Anile, in the air. Evam, thus. Drashtari, to the seer. Drishyatvam, for the purpose of seeing. Arupitam, is implied. abuddhibhi, by the less intelligent persons. Clouds and dust are carried by the air, but less intelligent persons say that the sky is cloudy and the air is dirty. Similarly, they also implant material bodily conceptions on the spirit self. Please repeat after me. Clouds and dust are carried by the sky, but less intelligent persons say that the sky is cloudy and the air is dirty. Similarly, they also implant material bodily conceptions on the spirit self. Srila Prabhupada's purport. It is further confirmed herein that with our material eyes and senses, we cannot see the Lord who is all spirit. We cannot even detect the spiritual spark which exists within the material body of the living being. We look to the outward covering of the body or subtle body of the living being, but we cannot see the spiritual spark within the body. So we have to accept the living being's presence by the presence of his gross body. Similarly, those who want to see the Lord with their present material eyes or with material senses are advised to meditate on the gigantic external feature called the Virat Rupa. For instance, when a particular gentleman goes in his car, which can be seen very easily, we identify the car with the man within the car. When the president goes out in his particular car, we say, quote-unquote, "There's the president." For the time being, we identify the car with the president. Similarly, less intelligent men who want to see God immediately without necessary qualification are shown first the gigantic material cosmos as the form of the Lord, although the Lord is within and without. The clouds in the sky and the blue of the sky are better appreciated in this connection. Although the bluish tint of the sky and the sky itself are different, we conceive of the color of the sky as blue. But that is a general conception for the layman only. Om Agyanti Medandhasya Gnanjana Shalakaya Chakshudun Militam Minatasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitandamano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Gudo Shri Utapatakabalam Shri Gudun Vaishnavamscha Shri Dupam Sagrajatam Sahaganadaganatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Ladata Shri Vashakan Vitamscha, He Krishna Kuduna Sandho Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Dadha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Godangi Dadhe Brindavaneshwari Brishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Dudubhyashtra Kripa Sandhubhya Evacha Padidanam Bhavane Bhyo Vaishnavi Bhyo Namo Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Dvaita Gadadhara Sri Vasari Gauda Bhakta Varinda Hare Krishna Krishna Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Ram Hare Ram, Ram Ram Hare Hare. So if you please picture yourself lying on a hillside, a beautiful hillside surrounded by grass, relaxing completely and looking up at the sky. And you'll see, you know, the big blue beautiful sky and billowing white cumulus clouds sort of slowly moving, right? Have you ever done that? Especially as a child, you lay there sometimes for hours just looking at the sky before you fall asleep. So the analogy given here in this verse is very significant. That really the sky is unchanging. It's the three-dimensional space that we see from horizon to horizon. Everything that's going on within the sky, such as the blue tint of the sky itself, the clouds that are moving through, and as it mentions here, the dust or even the mud, the particles of earth that are floating in the air, such as when the cows come home in Vrindavan, they kick up clouds of dust. Right? So all of that stuff is not actually the sky. It's just happening within the sky. The sky is pure. The sky is unchanging. So similarly, the soul is the same way. The soul is described in the Shastras as kutashta. It doesn't move. It doesn't change. Right? We as a soul, we're an eternal spiritual particle of Krishna. And therefore, we do not mix with material energy, just as the sky doesn't mix with all the stuff happening in the sky. And just as the clouds are moving and shifting shapes, right? Remember, you sit there and you say, "Oh, there's a dinosaur." right? There's a pterodactyl. There's a big sheep. There's a person with a giant nose, right? So just as you see all these different shapes, so we take different bodies, right? There's a pterodactyl. There's a pig. There's a hog. There's a Sri Sachinanda, right? So all these different shapes are constantly coming and going over the soul. And so for the materialist, though, or you might say for the person who's less intelligent, you just take the whole thing as the sky. You take the clouds to be the sky, the dust, the dirt, everything. So similarly for the average person, they just take these changing things as the person, as the soul, essentially. And the same thing applies to Krishna, right? Nasato vidite bhava, na bhava vidite sataha, ubhayor api drishtantas tanayos taptadharshabihi. So the spiritual platform and the material platform are almost opposites, right? One is constantly the same in its spiritual perfection, and the other is constantly changing, eternally, it's eternally mutable, right? And so Krishna is the same way. He's completely eternal. He's untouched by matter. And yet the material energy appears almost as if his body. And for the less intelligent class of men, this is kind of an introductory way of approaching the Supreme Lord, looking at the material energy as him, essentially, as his expansion. Okay? But it is foolish to conclude that the material energy is God. So that's kind of the essence of this particular verse. And Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita, yatakasho stito nityam vayu sarvatra go mahan. Right? Just as the all-pervading sky, you'll see that the vayu is moving around, the air is moving around in the sky, but the sky is unchanged. This is in the 9th chapter. So similarly, the material energy is moving around, it's blowing around within the Lord, and yet the Lord is untouched by it. He's unchanged by it. Right? He even mentions there, Krishna continues to talk about, you know, the material energy is constantly being created and destroyed. It's sort of expanding outward and contracting inward. This is just like the wind blowing within Krishna. Right? It's moving around within him. But he's untouched by it. He's unchanged. Okay? Now, Prabhupada mentions here that this is essentially a meditation object for the common man. In the second canto, in the first chapter, it goes into great detail about this Virat Rupa. And Prabhupada says there, I'm going to read a couple quotes from different purports. They're all coming from that second canto. The materially absorbed mind of the conditioned soul does not allow him to transcend the limit of the bodily conception of life. And thus the yoga system for meditation, controlling the sitting posture and breathing process, and fixing the mind upon the Supreme, is prescribed in order to mold the character of the gross materialist. Unless such materialists are able to cleanse the materially absorbed mind, it is impossible for them to concentrate upon the transcendence, upon thoughts of transcendence. And to do so, one may fix one's mind on the gross material or external feature of the Lord. So this is very interesting. So in that particular section, Maharaj Parikshit is asking Shukadeva Goswami, how do we meditate upon Krishna in a way that we're purified? Right? Shukadeva Goswami would begin discussing it's important that you meditate upon Krishna, and particularly that you meditate upon his limbs. Right? For devotees who are a little more advanced, we take a look directly at Sri Krishishi Rukmini Dwarkadish, right? And we see their limbs. Don't you see his beautiful arm raised with the flute? Right? And the beautiful jewels upon his fingers. You see his beautiful turban, his eyes. Just look how luxurious they are. Right? His beautiful smile. What to speak of Shishi Rukmini Devi. And just look at that beautiful Vanamali, that flower garland stretching down past his knees. And he's covered in jewelry, right? And notice the beautiful peacock feather. Bharhavatam samasatam buddha sundadangam. This incredibly beautiful anga, this beautiful form. This is what the devotees meditate upon. But for the common man, it's hard to understand the deity. You see sometimes these different Christians or college groups come in, and when they first come in, they just kind of look like, oh my God, like what the heck is this, right? what are you doing here? So it's hard for the average person to access that. And the reason is because one is not purified. It takes some purification to understand. I remember when I first came into the temple, I was totally bewildered. This is in Berkeley. I was thinking, oh my God, what did I just get into, right? and so it's very shocking for the average person, and they can't conceive of a transcendental personality. And so there has to be a stage of purification. And it's a kind of, and Shukadi Goswami is saying, you know, you have to meditate upon the limbs of the Lord. And then Maharaj Pariksit asks, well, how do you do that in a way that you're purified? And Shukadi Goswami begins describing how the entire universe can be seen as the limbs of the Lord. In the same way that we're looking at the body of Shri Rukmini Dwarkadish, you can look at the universe essentially as a deity. But the whole purpose of this is to mold the character, as Prabhupada says. Now, Prabhupada mentions in a later purport, the materialistic view of exploitation of the material resources is occasioned by the illusion of the external energy of the Lord, and as such, if anyone wants to realize the Supreme Truth by conceiving of the universal form of the Lord, he must cultivate the service attitude. Unless the service attitude is revived, the conception of Virat realization will have very little effect on the seer. So this is what it means to mold the character, is you have to, the average person, the common man, the materialist, has to change his attitude towards material energy from one of exploitation to one of service. So this is important. This is the purpose of the Virat Rupa. Okay? This kind of deification of material energy, it's a way for people to develop the service attitude. Instead of walking around, you know, material energy, say you're walking around Los Angeles, constantly looking at everything, analyzing, how can I dominate it? How can I enjoy it? How can I control it? The average person learns to all of a sudden see, you know, wow, this is an expansion of Krishna's energy. Los Angeles is a form of Krishna, right? Just like Prabhupada named Radha Londoneshwara, you know, meaning that Radha Londoneshwara, they're the lords of London. So similarly, Los Angeles is Rukmini Dwarkadish's kingdom. It's his abode, right? He owns this place. And if you go around and you see that Los Angeles is non-different from Krishna, right? It may not be the most attractive form of Krishna, but right? The dust and dirt and all the spray paint and stuff like that. Now you see the guy spray painting on the wall right there, and he's decorating the deity, no? Not exactly. So it's not exactly a beautiful form, but nevertheless, you can see that this is Krishna's energy. It's Krishna's world. It's meant for Krishna's service. Right? That's the next leap of logic, that I have to use this world in Krishna's service. And so for the average materialistic person, if he's walking around meditating that this world is Krishna, and the world is Krishna's, then he begins to think, wow, you know, Krishna's amazing. I shouldn't try to enjoy Krishna's matter. Ishavasya madam sarvam, right? This is all meant for Krishna. It's not meant for me. And that's really the whole purpose of the Virat Rupa meditation. Okay? Also, Prabhupada mentions here that, in another place in the second canto, that this is a way that when someone says, you know, demands, show me God, you could say, here he is, right? When people say, you know, I demand to see God right now. I don't believe in God. I want proof. Well, you're standing in it. The whole universe is proof. Everything you see is proof, right? In fact, the original scientists like Isaac Newton, that was the whole purpose, is to show, you know, to essentially delve into the opulences of God and sort of show his existence. And so for the average materialistic person, as Prabhupada mentions in today's purport, who doesn't have the necessary qualification to see God, he could see him in matter. Because the average materialistic person is already absorbed in matter. And I mean, speaking of myself, you know, at least that's my consciousness, right? Constantly absorbed in matter. Yeah, maybe thinking of Krishna every once in a while, you know, when I have to. But most of the time you're just sort of absorbed in material energy. So why not connect that to Krishna, right? And so, also Prabhupada mentions something interesting here. He says that just as, you know, in the way we identify the body with the individual falsely, he says when the president goes out in his particular car, we say, there is the president. You know, you see like the motorcade going by, and I think there's a limo called the Beast, right? Like the ceiling pops out and the Secret Service agents jump out like G.I. Joe with the machine gun and stuff, right? So I remember a few years ago, President Obama, he was actually coming to Sony Pictures Studio right here. It was like a 5-minute walk. And all the devotees, like quite a few devotees, went out there and ran out there to see, you know, the motorcade pull in, and there's hundreds of people around. And so everyone says, there's the president. There he is, right? And you don't see him. Behind tinted bulletproof glass, probably that thick, right? Because everybody loves the president, right? But nevertheless, you immediately think of the president. And so it's the same thing. I remember I was quite a few years ago, I think it was also President Obama, I was at the Cheviot Hill as I was chanting some japa, and then all of a sudden you see these, you know, I didn't know this was going to happen, but you see these huge warships. I think they're called ospreys. They're like helicopters, but they can turn into an airplane too, and they're gigantic, and they're like pitch black, right? And they're looming over the city, and they look, you know, really dangerous, very intimidating, like they could just, you know, start shooting into the city. Like they came in flying in very low, very aggressively, like trying to intimidate anyone that may try to kill the president, right? And behind that came Marine One, like the helicopter, and it came and it landed at Cheviot Hills. And I guess, you know, he was going to the Fox Studios or something like that for like a fundraiser. And so, but immediately all these Secret Service agents and the LAPD, they're all over the park, you know, and they're telling everyone, you know, get back, get back, get back. And then I was trying to render some service because I saw there's that golf course right there. I saw some kind of weird guy run up to the fence and kind of hide in the bushes, probably just checking out what's going on. But I was thinking, you know, oh, you know, dun, 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 you know, I'm going to like somehow help the Secret Service agents, you know. So I came forward to one of them and I was like, you know, hey, I saw a guy just run up to the fence there. He's kind of hiding in the bushes. You may want to check it out. And the Secret Service guy is just like, you know, get back, get back. You know, get out of here. We don't want your help, right? So this is the nature, you know, I was trying to render service to the president, right? I was trying to somehow have a personal interaction on a certain level, help the president. But I couldn't, because it's an impersonal contact. You know, it's just the helicopter, right? It's kind of like, it's the same way that when you approach the Vyatrupa of Krishna, you experience his opulences. And just like those helicopters, they're expressing that power, that you don't say majesty, but the fear impelled by those helicopters. It's saying, you know, someone powerful is coming. So similarly, the Vyatrupa of Krishna is showing that, right? You see the Vyatrupa in the 11th chapter. It's like the universal form is like that, especially the Kalarupa, when the flames start shooting from the mouths and the eyes and the fangs start chewing on soldiers and stuff. That's like the power of Krishna, the dangerous, you know, terrifying aspect of Krishna coming before him. But you can't really connect to Krishna through that, right? There's a level of disconnect that's there. You can't actually interact. You can't serve the Vyatrupa. And no more than you can serve the Marine One or the helicopters. Does that make sense? It's kind of like you have this external force of Krishna, and you can try to interact with it, but ultimately it's impersonal. Now, if you were, say, you know, I know that Obama, he used to go to Cheviot Hills and he would play basketball in the basketball courts there, right? He would take the executives and actors, whoever from Fox Studios, and then they would go shoot hoops. So, I mean, that's a much more intimate connection with the president, right? No, it's no Secret Service agents tell him to get out of here or anything like that. They have an access to Krishna. They can interact with him. Sorry, Obama. They can interact with him as a person. Yeah? But to speak of if you're actually friends with, say, his family, like his daughters or something like that, if you're friends with the family, then there's a very close relationship. You can actually go to dinner, you meet the president on a much more intimate level. He's not even a president, he's a person. You're meeting Barack or something, right? So in this way, there's more intimate ways of relating to the Supreme Lord. Right? The Vyatrupa is kind of the impersonal. You're just looking at the limousine. You're looking at the car. You're looking at the external manifestation that you can't really interact with. You're sort of held back. Whereas when you interact with Krishna, say in his deity form, you're really interacting with Krishna in a very personal, intimate way. Okay? And therefore the Vaishnavas are not so much interested in the Vyatrupa, because the Vaishnavas have cultivated that service attitude. Does that make sense? It's like the whole purpose of the Vyatrupa is to cultivate that service attitude. And for the gross materialist, that's just the beginning. Changing from dominating and exploiting matter to recognizing its relationship with God and appreciating it and humbling yourself and trying to render service. But for the Vaishnavas, those who are in the parampara, we're already expected to be on that level. We're already in the mood of service. We've been instructed directly about the personality of Krishna and how to interact with him through the via medium of service. And so therefore, we directly connect with Krishna in a much more intimate way. Okay? Now, there's interesting, there's other ways of approaching the universal form. There's sort of like a, you know, there's the way of seeing the universe as the deity of Krishna, but there's also a way of appreciating Krishna within matter. And you'll see this is emphasized in the 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, is that you see his opulences. You appreciate that everything is coming from Krishna. And even for Vaishnavas who are engaged directly in the worship of Krishna in the spiritual world, in the form of Vishnu or Krishna, still, you can remember Krishna by seeing him in matter. It's very wonderful to remember Krishna, right? And not only that, but you can, it also gives an opportunity for the common man to remember Krishna. So therefore, Krishna will mention so many different ways of meditating upon him and seeing him within matter. He mentions, you know, he is the light of the sun and the moon, right? And as Mukunda Dat Prabhu was mentioning the other day, this Sarasam Asmi Sagara, he's the, of all bodies of water, he is the ocean. So Vaishnavas, you know, we can remember that. When you go, when you drive down the one or something and you see the ocean, you should remember that's Krishna. When you see the beauty of the sunset, that's Krishna, right? That's Krishna's beauty. Now, we don't necessarily think it's directly Krishna, but it's Krishna's power, it's his beauty manifesting and shining through matter. Right? Just like if you look at a stained glass window, it's ultimately it's the beauty of the sun. So similarly, Krishna, as the Supersoul, as one little spark of his opulence, right? Ekamshas tato jagat, he's situated within the universe, and then just the brilliance of that one spark is creating everything we see here. All the beauty of the universe, everything that's shining, everything that's glorious, whatever may we may be attracted to, all the beauty, all the strength, all the knowledge, all the fame, right? Everything that attracts our vision, everything that attracts our senses, that's all just Krishna's opulence. It's Krishna's power. It's Krishna shining through the universe. And so, really, what we want to do as devotees is not simply, you know, we can appreciate the stained glass window. We can appreciate the beauty of it all and understand it comes from Krishna. But as devotees, we reach through and we open the window, right? And we see the beauty of the sun behind the window. And we develop a personal relationship with the sun. And as devotees, that service attitude is really what we cultivate more and more and more. And we sort of just like a spark of a fire, we keep lighting it and igniting it, right? And bringing it stronger and stronger. And that's really how Srila Prabhupada preached, isn't it? He would find one little spark of service attitude within somebody. That's really what he's looking for. You know, does anyone want to do anything for Krishna? Even remember the drunkard in 26th Second Avenue bringing in toilet paper or whatever. Prabhupada's trying to fan the spark, fan the spark, fan the spark. So as our service attitude grows, it moves beyond Devyant Rupa, even beyond Vishnu and Vaikuntha. In fact, I want to read a quote here from Prabhupada. It says, the Virat Rupa, or the gigantic feature of the Supreme Lord, includes everything materially manifested, and therefore the Virat, or gigantic feature of the Lord, is the Supersoul of all living and non-living entities. But the Virat Rupa is also the manifestation of Narayan or Vishnu, and going further on and on, one will eventually see that Lord Krishna is the ultimate Supersoul of everything that be. Excuse me. So as Krishna says, Vishtabhyam idam kritsnam ekangshinas tato jagat, that when you understand this whole Virat Rupa is nothing but a manifestation, one little spark of the Supersoul, and then you actually, you know, through developing your service attitude, you go deeper and deeper, even beyond the Supersoul to Vishnu, and then beyond Vishnu to Krishna himself in Vrindavan, right? The beautiful cowherd boy who's herding all these cows, and he's there with Srimati Radharani and the gopas and the gopis, right? And Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj. This is the ultimate form of that same personality. And so our position as devotees is we're gradually developing this service attitude, and we're growing increasingly personal. That's the idea here, right? As you move past the Supersoul and past Vishnu and into Vrindavan, you're getting more closer and closer and more intimate, and what's bringing you forward is the quality of your service attitude. And so as devotees, we meditate constantly upon Krishna. We try to think of Krishna. We try to serve Krishna constantly. Everything we do as an offering to Krishna for his pleasure, right? in the beginning of devotional service, we may do some things for Krishna. Yeah, you know, I got to go worship the deities. Yeah, I got to go do this. I have to do book distribution. Got to do this. And we kind of make ourselves, we force ourselves to do it. That's good. But more deeper is that we cultivate that service attitude and we're trying to, you know, actually please Krishna with that activity. Okay, I'm going to go serve the deity. I'm going to go dress the deity. I've been meditating, right? I have an idea of what I want to do. I've been thinking about this for 2 or 3 days. I set aside all the paraphernalia that I'm going to use, right? I can't wait. I'm going to actually do something very beautiful for Krishna. I'm going to decorate Krishna so nicely. It's almost like a painting. You know, like when you have a painting and you choose the perfect frame and everything is done nicely. I'm going to do that. Right? And even more, you're cultivating this mood of service. You know, it becomes finer and finer to where you just want to please Krishna with everything you do. And so the devotee's entire life becomes an offering to Krishna where everything is a deep meditation and trying to give Krishna happiness. Yeah? You see, with Srila Prabhupada, every moment of his life, he's trying to give Krishna pleasure. Yeah, he's serving Krishna. He's trying to preach Krishna consciousness, obviously, which is very pleasurable to Krishna. But everything he does, he's doing for Krishna as a person. Right? As his dear most intimate friend and well-wisher, he's serving Krishna. And he's trying to give Krishna happiness. Okay? So that's what we have as devotees. Our whole position is to try to give Krishna happiness, to make him happy, to make Krishna feel some sort of pleasure in what we do for him. Okay? So thank you very much. Are there any questions or comments? Okay, we'll end about 5 minutes early. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.